What's up, Who Dat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Saints Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to this special episode of the Dome Patrol Podcast. This is a UK special, just me and James. James, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. It's been a while since it's just been the two of us having a chat about the Saints.
Yeah, it's been a while. And we've got a special guest joining us tonight. How excited are you to hear from the special guest?
Yeah, no, he's a friend of the podcast. He's been on before. He's always got some good stuff to talk about with us. And hopefully we'll have the same this evening.
So we'll talk to you after that, after this interview with Jeff Duncan. So now on the, I'm going to call it a Jubilee special, just me and you, James. The Brits are hosting, so it's a Jubilee special guest, Jeff Duncan from Times Picking News /Nona.com. Jeff, welcome back to the Dome Patrol. It's great to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, being great. It's been too long. It's probably been my fault. I've been too busy, or at least maybe enjoying the nightlife here in New Orleans a little too much. It's probably the truth of the matter. But always good to visit with you guys.
Good. So. Yeah, since we last spoke, it's just been absolutely mental with the Saints. Sean Payton retired, Dennis Allen came in, and then it was a disaster of an off-season before the draft because people were underwhelmed with free agency. Like, just give us an overall, your thoughts on the off-season so far for the Saints.
Well, Ben, I agree. I think it started slow, but man, it really got momentum here in the last probably few weeks, and the Saints fans here in New Orleans, the ones I talk to in my job, or the ones that reach out to me through my email or my social media, they're all kind of over the moon right now. You know, the fact that they added a couple of local college players and Tyrann Mathieu and Jarvis Landry, which has always been something of a, you know, cross to bear for the Saints, that they don't have that many players on the roster from LSU. And then coupled with drafting a receiver, we all know that's been the kind of the mission of all Saints fans, to get another receiver, and getting the left tackle as well, Trevor Penning. It feels like everyone's ecstatic right now. I haven't really seen this much energy and enthusiasm in a long time. And the thing that I find interesting is that locally, and I think among the Saints fan base at large, all over the world, everyone seems to think the Saints are on the right track, that they're going to have a very good season if they get some breaks, stay healthy, all the regular things you need. But outside of New Orleans, nationally here in the States, through the NFL experts analysis, and even the Las Vegas odds makers, they see another mediocre season. And I think that's really interesting. There's a real polarity between Saints fans, what they think of the team, and what everybody else thinks across the country. So someone's going to be wrong, and I'm kind of eager to see how it plays out.
Yeah, no, it's you explained it really well. Locally, everybody is really high. You know, I mean, I've on a show we did where we looked through the schedule, I think I put us down for 13 wins, but I always go high, right. always go high. But you know, I've seen some national people say we're going to win less games than we won last year. But to me, the roster is improved. I don't, you know, the defense is still going to be factor? Yeah, I think it is. The defense is still going to be really, really, really good. And on offense now, we've completely changed the narrative. We had no wide receivers last year. We've now got three really good wide receivers, and our 1, 2, and 3 from last year are now 4, 5, and 6 this year. I don't understand the negativity nationally towards the Saints. And like Ben said, is it the Payton? Is it the lack of Sean Payton and the change that they've made there?
I think it's the combination Payton Breeze, right? You lost Breeze a year ago. Now you lost Sean Payton. They were both the faces of the franchise. And now you've got two kind of unknowns. I mean, no one really knows what you're getting as a head coach. And Dennis Allen came from a defensive background. He did not succeed when he was a head coach in Oakland. We know the factors there, but nevertheless, he does have that one loss record. And I also think the Jameis Winston factor nationally people are still questioning, because he had such a limited body of work last year, because his actual passing numbers were really low. I mean, he wasn't asked to carry the team, as you all know. So his passing numbers were fairly modest. I think between those two and him coming off a major knee injury, I think those two things have led to questions. And let's face it, those are the two most important things any NFL team has, the head coach and a quarterback. So those questions, I think, have led to it. But I agree, James. I think the roster, if you just look at the roster, it's as good as it's been in a while. And defensively alone, I think this team is going to be one of the top five defenses in the league, and that'll keep you in games. Jameis Winston doesn't have to be a superhero. He just has to be efficient, not make a ton of mistakes, which he showed last year he could do. So I think I think people are sleeping on the Saints right now nationally. I think they're going to be I don't know if they're going to be a Super Bowl contender, but I'll be surprised if they're not in the playoff mix as we get to December.
Well, last year we were 30 seconds away from the playoffs because the Rams couldn't keep the 49ers out with four quarterbacks and 58 different starters on the team. I fail to see how we don't win more games this year. And, you know, the NFC isn't that strong this year. Right. You know, 10 wins is probably going to get you third seed, fourth seed maybe.
Yeah.
And I just don't see how the Saints don't get to that number of wins.
I was just talking to a scout earlier today about the disparity between the AFC and the NFC. And just think about this, guys. The AFC, look at the quarterbacks, right? You got Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert. Yeah, I mean, somebody there is not going to even make the Pro Bowl of those guys. You know, Derek Carr is a really good player. You know, they're top six.
Russell Wilson.
Yes, Russell Wilson. You know, there's going to be three good, Deshaun Watson, who knows how good he's going to be. They're going to be three or four really good quarterbacks to only make the Pro Bowl in the AFC. And then NFC, it's pretty wide open for the most part. So I think the balance of power has definitely shifted to the AFC. And I think the Saints know that. I think that's one of the reasons why there are a number of reasons why I think Mickey Loomis went all in this offseason. I think one, he recognizes the maturity of the roster. I mean, this is a mature roster. Yeah, they've got some young players playing, but for the most part, the core of the roster is that 2017 group. These guys are about 5 years in now. Yeah. So this is when they're in their primes. So now's the time to strike. And I think he also wants Dennis Allen to have success, which makes sense. You know, he hired him. He made a decision. Some people thought it was controversial to promote him. I think he wants him to have success also for the local fan base, which is naturally going to compare him to Sean Payton, who's beloved here. So you want him to get off to a good start and not have those questions immediately pop up. Oh, if Sean Payton were here, they would be doing better. So I think Mickey's got a number of reasons to do what he's done this year. I mean, they don't care about the future right now. They're all in this year. And I think the fact that the NFC is weakened is emboldened in this offseason.
Yeah, definitely.
Talking of Peyton, like, obviously it was a massive shock to us and obviously a shock to yourselves that he decided to go on his break now. And did you not see it coming at all? Was this completely out of the blue for you?
No, look, I mean, you know, of course, I wrote the infamous column that everybody now loves to give me grief about. I tell people all the time, if I had just had one more day, like our editors made me, let me just explain to you how that all went down. So I was on the case of Sean Payton that whole week, and my editors had asked me to write a column about his future and what was going on, mainly about him going to another team. Remember, back then there was a lot of people talking about him going to the Cowboys and all this stuff. There was a report that Mike McCarthy was in trouble. So mainly they wanted me to clear the air about that. I was working on it. I actually talked to Sean Payton that week. He was down in Mexico. I don't think anybody else in the country knew he was in Mexico but me. And I knew that the coaches in the Saints offices were walking around not knowing what's going on. So I was pretty much on top of what was going on out there. The problem was I had to turn the column in. It was going to run in the Sunday paper. I had to turn it in Friday morning, right? Friday morning. So I was still getting a lot of intel on both sides. A lot of people close to Sean Payton saying, I think, you know, he goes through this every year, about every year. He kind of has this reevaluation, and he's going to come around. You know, the Saints asked him to go away for about 10 days and think about it, but he's going to come back you know, he'll come to his senses. But I knew he was definitely considering retiring. I knew that. But I knew he wasn't going to another team. And so that's kind of what the crux of my column was about, is he's not going to another team. But by the time I turned in my column on Friday morning, and by the time Friday night got there, I had some new information that said he was seriously considering stepping away. Yeah. But by then it was too late, and I had to wait all the way till it came out on Sunday morning. And by the time it came out on Sunday morning, I knew that he was probably leaning the other way, and it was, you know, too late to pull it back. The toothpaste was out of the tube. and I'd found out, say, for instance, Friday afternoon that he was selling his house here in New Orleans. I'd found out he wasn't returning texts from very key people inside the organization that normally he would always talk to. So these things, all these little breadcrumbs,
yeah,
were leading me to believe this is serious, more serious than even I thought. But in the column, I even wrote, look, I could be wrong. He could walk in and say to Mickey Loomis's office on Monday, say he's stepping down. He very well could do that. That's how touch and go this is. But nobody read the column, guys. They all just read the headline. That's all that matters now. All that matters is the headline. No one wants to read the nuance of the column. And even I say he could very well do this. I'm going to live with that one forever.
And something that's – were you in the press conference, Robert? The four-day-long press conference that he did at the end?
Oh, yeah, I was there.
How was that as an experience? Was it just kind of a bit surreal? You know, thought this day was going to come, or?
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, what was actually more strange was we were all the local media that day was out at a local restaurant out in Metairie for the Saints Hall of Fame. We were all the selection committee that picks the Saints Hall of Fame. We were having our lunch that day where we picked the upcoming Hall of Fame class. So literally all the local media was in a restaurant at about 11:30 that day. And I got a text from a source that said, Sean's having a press conference today. He's stepping down. And I had to extract myself from the table while we were bantering over who was going to go in the Hall of Fame. And I had to do it in a kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a clandestine way.
Yeah.
Because these were also people I was competing with to get the story, right? So I got up and walked outside. And when I got out in the parking lot, my Wi-Fi wasn't connected. And I couldn't get the tweet sent out in time to tell everybody. So I had to call my office to get them to try to put it up. And by the time I did that, it gotten out. You know, it went like rapid fire. But then everyone left that lunch. Everybody got up and went, because we knew there was a press conference in 2 hours and it was a huge news story. So it was really kind of a crazy afternoon. And we were all still kind of reeling, Ben, by the time we got out to Saints facility for that press conference. And Sean was classic Sean Payton. He kind of just sat up there, winged it, very improvisational. He just kind of told stories. It was very similar to what I saw him do on Saturday. He was the commencement speaker here at Loyola University. And he told me, he goes, I didn't do a script or anything. I'm just going to get up there and talk for 10 or 12 minutes and kind of just wing it. And that's what he did. He's kind of all over the place, but he's got an ability to string all that together and make it sound good.
So he's going to be a good success on the TV analyst role then, you think?
I'm not 100% sure, James, he's going to be successful. I'm not, because of that, he's kind of a rambler. I'm kind of that way a little bit. On TV, you got to be concise, quick, in and out. And that's not Sean's strength. Sean's strength is telling stories, a great, great storyteller. He's great sitting around a table over some pints and listen to him tell stories. But on TV, he's got to be a little more economical. But I think he'll be successful. I just don't know if he's going to be Tony Romo, you know?
Yeah. See, my next question then was going to be, how was the, now obviously stories, you don't need to tell us any stories. How was the meal you all had with him after he announced his retirement? Didn't you all go out for a meal, or did he take you all out for a meal?
Yeah.
Was that good?
Yeah, it was a fantastic night. I mean, he reached out to me after that press conference and asked me to help him put it together. The hard part was deciding who to invite and who we couldn't invite. So I made him be the bad guy. I said, give me a number. Because I don't want to tell people they can't come, and I don't want to be the bad guy. So we ended up with 40 local journalists, which is a great number. Yeah. And we were there for 5.5 hours, told stories all night. He told a bunch of great stories. We got to roast him a little bit, tell all of our worst Sean Payton moments where he's called us at 6 a.m. and cursed us out over a headline or something. So it was all good natured. It was a lot of fun, and certainly said a lot about him that he recognized, you know, our role. And I can tell you, man, the first 5 years, he would have never done that. First 5 years, he had a very contentious relationship with the local media, and he came around. And by the end, I think everybody enjoyed working with him.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings me on to my next sort of question, really. Do you see Sean returning to coaching, not this obviously coming to the season after? Do you think it's a quick career in the TV, or do you reckon he'll be back coaching?
I'll be stunned if he's out longer than a year. You know, I mean, he could. I think the reason he might stay out longer will be if next year nothing really appealing opens up. Like, he's not going to run and just take any old job. He's not going to take a job with a bad ownership or dysfunctional management. He's going to go somewhere that's functioning, and he doesn't have to run off. I mean, he's got a ton of money in the bank. He's got a great lifestyle right now. He's got a house in Idaho that he's at right now where he can get down to LA where his daughter is. He's got a beach house over here in Florida, and he's got a condo in downtown New Orleans. So, you know, he can bounce around between those three places, play a lot of golf, and enjoy his life away from the stress. But he will get back in, Ben, because that's the way he's wired. You know, he's an intense, competitive guy. And I think he wants to be in the arena, so to speak. I don't think he wants to be on the sidelines critiquing other players and coaches. I can't see him not getting the itch sooner rather than later.
Yeah, exactly. And
the sooner James, it happens, the sooner it happens, the better draft picks we'll get. So
I think that was in the Saints' mind when they traded. Yeah,
if it's a 1 year deal, then we'll get a first round pick if he signs for somebody next year. Surely it's got to be that type of compensation, if not more.
Well, Mickey Loomis told me off the record one day. I feel like I can share it here. Yeah, I'm not putting a headline on it, but he said he was going to hold whoever came after him to a very high standard. So he's not going to roll over. He will demand high compensation from whoever it is. So rest assured. Another guy, I think the other thing that people are forgetting is, you know, the way the compensatory draft pick formula works out, the signing of Landry and Matthew doesn't compute into that.
No.
So that will help as well, because Teron Armstead and Marcus Williams were both very high-level free agents that were lost.
Yep.
So the formula should work out in the Saints' favor.
Exactly.
Yeah, good.
We mentioned it earlier, bringing Landry and Matthew in. Like, the Saints don't really draft LSU players in the Peyton era. And was there an actual reason for that, do you know? Or was it just – if Peyton was still here, you would expect to see Landry and Matthew turn up this offseason as well.
Yeah, look, I put it this way. I don't think it had anything to do with Sean Payton. You know, Jeff Ireland runs the drafts, and Jeff Ireland, I know, thinks highly of LSU players because of the same reason he likes Ohio State players. He likes big school guys because they practice against high-level talent. They iron sharpens iron kind of philosophy. So he likes guys from big programs like LSU. I just think it hadn't worked out. I mean, I brought this up a few times, like a player like Patrick Queen, who was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago out of LSU by Baltimore. He doesn't fit the Saints prototype at linebacker.
No.
So I remember a lot of people had him mocked to go to the Saints. And I was like, he's not going to go to the Saints. Now, maybe if he's there in like round 3, yeah, they might take him. Yeah. but like he's not going to fit their system. And so there were a lot of guys like that they don't don't fit in.
We ended up with Cesar Ruiz instead, who actually you did mock here, and I just want to say thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, there wasn't anything to it. I mean, I know they really liked Tyrann Mathieu when he came out, but there was a lot of people that were worried about Tyrann Mathieu being – and Tyrann Mathieu's talked about it. He talked to us about it, that he would not have been a good fit here early on in his career. He's got a lot of people around him that it's kind of a bad element that he had to get away from. And it worked out for him. He got away in Phoenix, got his career together, and now – got his family life together, and that worked out perfectly. Probably wouldn't have worked out as well for him if he'd had to make his way here in the NFL.
So whilst we're talking about LSU players, there's a free agent wide receiver that played for LSU that Jarvis Landry and Tyrann Mathieu were heavily recruiting. Any chance?
Yeah, that's a good question. I doubt it. It just doesn't seem like a good fit if I'm Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, where's he going to play? The Saints are definitely going to want to get Chris Olave on the field. I guess he could be the fourth receiver. I can't see that being a good fit. Maybe.
A late season signing maybe once he's over his knee
injury? Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's up to Odell Beckham Jr., right? It's very similar to Jarvis Landry. I mean, Jarvis Landry signed for $3 million a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's very low. And so this shows you his market was not that strong. I mean, I know he had some better offers at some other teams, but they weren't that much better, and his market was pretty tepid. So I would be surprised if they added Beckham Jr. just because it doesn't feel like a good fit for the receiver, who I know is probably going to want to have big numbers and try and cash in somewhere long term. I mean, that's what Jarvis Landry's doing. He signed for a below market deal because he thinks he can boost his numbers and then get back on the market next year and get a bigger long-term deal. That's kind of the roll of the dice.
Yeah.
So I can see Beckham on the Bengals for some reason. I can just see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's
he's going to have he's going to have a market. I just don't know. Some of these guys I think go in, and we all do, man. We all value ourselves more than probably everybody else outside. And, Tyrann Mathieu's deal is not what he originally thought he was going to get. I mean, he was asking for – 12, 13 million a year. And, he's really getting half that probably. And that's just the way it is. Once you get up around 30, unless you're a superstar in this league, it's very hard to get top dollar.
Yeah. So talking about the wide receivers room, obviously Michael Thomas is hopefully coming back fully fit this year. We've brought Jarvis Landry in. Can you see those two coexisting? Because they're both alpha males, I think would be the best way to describe them. Do you see that working? Can you see there being a clash there maybe? Or will Jarvis Landry accept that it's Michael Thomas's room and step back a little bit? Because I mean, we've all seen that famous Hard Knocks clip of Jarvis Landry. You know, it's two big egos in a room. Doesn't always work.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think it'll work fine. I'm sure they even talked before he came on board. Michael Thomas, I think, has been humbled a little bit the last year or two. I've heard nothing but positive things about him. And I know Dennis Allen flew out to meet with him, this offseason. And I think part of that was just not only to get to know him a little bit better, but also to let him know that they're counting on him being the leader of that wide receiver room. He needs to go into a different role there. And I think he's embraced that. So I don't think there'll be a problem, especially knowing Jarvis Landry and talking to people around him. I mean, he's a tremendous leader, and I think he'll understand he's the third receiver here. You know, he's the slot receiver in this group. He's going to know his role. I think it'll only be a positive thing because Mike Thomas is not necessarily a great mentor. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows how to work, and he kind of leads by example. And I think he's growing into that role. But Jarvis Landry, that's something that's a strength of his. So I think they'll coexist just fine. What I'm interested in seeing is just, how much Mike Thomas has got. We haven't seen him on the field in, 2 years just about. What's he going to be like? I he's such an incredible worker. But the fact is, this has been a problem for him. If he doesn't have wheels, even though I know it's not about his strength, about speed, but you still have to be able to cut and you still have to be able to get separation. And I'm really eager to see him on the field because I think that's something that everyone is just my years of covering the National Football League. One thing I've noticed when you go to the off season, everybody just presumes, you know, fans, media, we all of us, oh, this guy's going to be what he was last year. It's just natural, right? You know, this guy's, and it's never that way. Some guys get better. Lots of guys just drop off and you just don't know. It's hard to see when they're going to drop off. And I'm not saying Mike Thomas is going to be that guy, but I think that's what everybody looks at the roster and says, okay, DeMario Davis is a Pro Bowler. Well, you know, at some point he's going to drop off and it happens all the time. And so that's why I'm always hesitant to just mint the team for what they are, because I've just seen it over the years. Guys, certain guys regress from year to year, and it just happens in this league, especially when you get up 30 and over.
Yeah. So talking of the offense still, any update on what's happened or happening with Alvin Kamara yet?
No, there's been no word on that. I think the last I heard, the team and his representation, they're trying to just push this thing back, trying to push the trial back, trying to push everything back. So similar to what happened with Deontay Hardy last year, I think that finally all came down midseason. I think the Saints are trying to do something similar to where if he does get disciplined, it'll be on the back end or maybe even in the next season. That's kind of the goal, I think.
Yeah, from a personal point of view, as long as it's not week four.
Surely the NFL want the league stars coming over and being the face of a game over here. Surely the NFL won't suspend him for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think it's funny. I've talked to some legal experts in town about it, and they think a lot's going to come down to how much the Las Vegas, like district attorney, how much do they want to make an example out of Alvin Kamara, because they got him on video. So they kind of got the goods on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can make it as hard or as soft as they want. So I think talking to some attorneys in town, they think eventually what's going to happen is Alvin Kamara is going to settle this thing out of court and write a big check. So it's probably going to go away, but that still won't, you know, release him from discipline from the NFL. He can still get suspended, even if it is settled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously we just mentioned that we're very excited over here for the London game. We seriously hope you can make it, Jeff. And a lot of our listeners are from the UK. We've also have quite a lot of listeners from the US. As you've been to London twice, once for pleasure, one for the Saints. Would you definitely recommend this trip? Did anyone think about coming over?
Oh my gosh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I did a little review of the schedule for the Times-Picayune and had to pick like best road game. And I said, that's a no-brainer. Going to London, I'm fired up to see this new stadium, Tottenham Hotspur. He shakes his head. I've heard it's an amazing stadium. That's all I've heard. One of the more modern stadiums in the league. And so it was built with the NFL in mind. So I'm eager to see that. But also just London's, you know, one of the great cities in the world. So if you can go over there and enjoy NFL football, your favorite team, and then to get to experience all the great things there are to do in London, to me, that's a once-in-a-lifetime type of trip. And I know a lot of New Orleanians do go over there for that. But also your listeners, if you're over there and you want to come over and experience American football, I don't think it could be a better weekend. We saw how many things were going on in the city last time that they played. I'm sure there's going to be even more off-the-field type stuff going on, plus the London Marathon in town. So it should be an incredible weekend to be over there.
Yeah, no, it should be. So on the London game, what is the process that the Saints go through for deciding which game they give up? Now, we were told in that all the London games about 3 years ago were going to be NFC versus AFC, and they wouldn't bring any over and any conference games, for instance. And there was a rumor that it might be the Bengals that were going to be the Saints' opponent. So what goes into, do the Saints have a say? Can they veto, or can they say we want to keep that game? How does that work?
The only thing I know for sure, James, is the Saints can block. They're allowed to block one home game.
Right.
So they can pick a home game that they want to have and say, you can't take this one. And I know for a fact they did not block the Bengals game. I know that. So a lot of people think, oh, the NFL, you know, taking the game, you know, they blame the NFL because that's what everybody does, right? The NFL is like the big faceless institution that everybody loves to kick around. It's like the Internal Revenue Service or something.
Yeah.
Easy to hate, right? But the NFL wasn't – I mean, the Saints, if they wanted to have that Bengals game in the Superdome, they could have blocked it and kept it there. But the fact is, a lot of the Saints people did not want that game in the Superdome because they feared Bengals fans coming in, buying up all the tickets, and becoming a pseudo-home game for Cincinnati. So that game was not blocked.
Fans too, probably.
Yeah, so that game was not blocked. But what also happens in that situation is the networks get involved. And the league definitely caters to the TV networks because the TV networks pay billions of dollars to broadcast the game. And the TV network that stepped in wanted that Bengals game for obvious reasons. And so they didn't want it to be in London.
Yeah. So do you know what game was blocked?
I'm pretty sure it was the Ravens game. The Ravens game, which ended up on Monday Night Football, I believe.
Okay.
Ravens don't like traveling over here. John Harbaugh had an absolute fit when he was over here last time. Yeah. They got hammered by the Jags, and he just absolutely slated the whole experience. So,
well, look, I mean, I don't think that AFC NFC thing is valid because when I first heard about the international game, I was the first one to report that they were going to play in London. I got that word at the Senior Bowl.
Mm.
You know that was like right after the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I reported it, and at the time I had two Saints sources, high level Saints sources, that said it was going to be a division game. You know, that's what they were told. Mm. So it moved around. There was a moving target there on the opponent, but I don't think it's locked in at all conference wise and as you can see what's coming up, I mean, the networks next year, there's not going to be an affiliation. You know, Fox right now usually gets the road NFC game, and the AFC goes to CBS. They're going to be able to take any games starting next year. So I think there's more flexibility involved.
Yeah. So you said the Bengals game, which is week six, isn't it? I think. Yes, week six, isn't it? The Bengals game. I'm really surprised that's not a primetime game.
Yeah. I think it's a bigger game. Saints fans in Louisiana than it is nationally.
Yeah, you know, possibly.
Our editors were talking about that. I mean, I can think about it with like Aaron Rodgers, right? He's from out in the Bay Area, and the 49ers skipped over him in that draft, and he went to the Packers. And every time the Packers and 49ers play, they put that game on national TV and they build that thing up. But like, if you think about it, do we really care about that storyline? I mean, that he went to Cal Berkeley and didn't go to San. I mean, it's not really that compelling to us outside of there. I think it's very similar for other NFL fans. Now, what I do think is interesting is that Bengals game. I put this in my column about that stretch of midseason. I think they play 8 games in 50 days, and 7 of the opponents are playoff teams from a year ago, and the one that's not is the Ravens. But let's face it, they're a playoff team every year, just about. So that stretch, to me, the Saints really need to start strong because the schedule gets tougher once they get back from London.
Yeah, they have given us a nice start, actually. You know, away or at the Falcons, Falcons, they're the biggest rivals. I genuinely believe they will be picking first next year. That team is not good.
Would not surprise me. And they might get the quarterback from Alabama, Bryce Young, and they might be good for another 15 years, you know?
Yeah, possibly. And then obviously Tampa, we all know the Saints own Tampa Bay. We don't need to worry about Tom Brady. Carolina before London. Carolina aren't going to be very good this year, I don't think.
They weren't, and then last the Vikings, year. Still slipped up.
And then the Vikings, yeah, but it was the COVID game. And then the Vikings, we have a good record against the Vikings in the regular season.
Yeah, so I agree with you. And even Seattle.
Yeah.
When they come back, Seattle's down. I mean, I think they're in a transition. They have no quarterback right now, really. So I agree with you. I think if the team could start 4-1, which I think they very well could, That would be a great way to go into that gauntlet midseason if you got a little cushion there with the one loss record.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think, I mean, I'm going to say 5-0, but I'm always positive.
I love it. I love it. There's always like some slip up game the Saints have, you know?
Always.
And it's impossible to project it, you know? I do a little TV spot here. I work with Fox 8. So we do pregame coverage at the Superdome. And it's so funny. I can't tell you how many times I'm standing on the field in the Superdome and the host is asking me, could this be a trap game? Could the Saints overlook this game? And I'll stand up there and go, no way. They've had their game face on. Sean Payton's got them ready. And then they go out and lay an egg, you know. It happens every year. Yeah. Where I'm
the Giants.
Yeah, Giants game, the Falcons game. I mean, it's just, it happens.
There's a few last year, yeah.
Hard to predict those things.
So, just going back onto the salary cap, obviously the Saints actually got quite a lot of cap room left. Do you see the Saints maybe bringing in one or two more players? They're seen as a lot of running backs visiting Saints. Sony Michel wasn't talked about before he signed with Dolphins. I can't remember who was the guy just visiting recently, James.
Well, I don't. Daryl, you're talking about Daryl Williams. I don't think he visited, did he, Jeff?
I don't know if he actually visited. I don't think he
did. He was just in town.
Yeah, you know, he's from the area, so I could see them. Obviously, they pursued Sony Michel. I heard his physical did not go well either. So that may have been a blessing in disguise. They didn't get him. I could see them finding a backup running back, but I don't think that's a huge priority. I mean, I think the roster's pretty set. I think they want to keep a little cushion. They have to keep some cushion because they're going to have to, you know, prepare for injuries during the season. Those always happen. So I don't think they're going to go rushing out to spend money. Mickey Loomis wanted to get the cap in order. I know everybody talks about how the salary cap and the wizardry of Mickey and Kai Harley, but look, they paid a price. I mean, there's a reason they weren't active in free agency for the most part. There's a reason they couldn't sign Teron Armstead and Marcus Williams.
Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah, I mean, they lost some good players because there's repercussions to kicking the can down the road. And it came back to haunt them a little bit this past year. And I think Mickey Loomis knows that. And he did a good job, I thought, this year of being very frugal and getting guys like Jarvis Landry and Tyrann Mathieu, very good players at very good prices. Even Marcus May is a good price. I mean, they signed Marcus May and Tyrann Mathieu for what Marcus Williams signed in Baltimore. So they got two safeties for the price of one. You know, I thought that was very good.
Yeah, I mean, next year, I think, isn't Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's contract due for next year? I can't imagine he's going to be cheap.
Well, neither is Marcus Davenport. I mean, he's the big one.
Yeah.
Because if he has a big breakout year, he's going to be a top dollar guy because he plays a premium position. And then you also have to factor in Jameis Winston. I mean, he's playing at a very below market rate right now. And if he has a really solid season, I think they'll renegotiate his deal and sign him long term. But it's a real make or break year for Winston. If he doesn't, they could walk away from him after this season. So there's a lot on the line for him.
Yeah, well, one of the questions that I've written down actually was about Jameis Winston. It was, you know, the team have put all the pieces in place for him this year. You know, I think the success kind of the team rests on his shoulders just to a certain degree. Do you think he can or will handle that pressure? Because it's the best roster that he's had since he's been a quarterback in the league, I would say. Even, you know, at Tampa, it's the one that's set up for him the best.
No, I agree 100%. And I think that's the key to the whole season. I don't think necessarily Jameis Winston has to play lights out for this team to make the playoffs. I think he has to play solid. I think he has to be good. And I think they'll make the playoffs. I think the key is what you're saying, James, is, you know, can they win a Super Bowl with Jameis Winston? I mean, can he get into the NFC Championship game against the 49ers or the Rams or the Cowboys or somebody like that and make the plays you have to make to lead a team? That's what we don't know about it.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that. That'll play itself out. I think everyone in the building likes Jameis Winston. They all want him to do well. I think his talent is off the charts. But there's also some inconsistencies that rear its head, and that's what gives some of the people inside Saints facility some pause. You know, they don't see it. He may have two games in a row where he's lights out, he does everything right, and then it doesn't carry over into the third game. There's kind of a lapse, and it causes them to kind of have doubts. And so that may come with maturity, though. That consistency could come the more he plays, and especially with a good team, like you said, this roster's stacked. So yeah. I think everyone believes he can do it and is confident he can do it, but he's going to have to do it. You know, it really comes down to that.
Yeah, I mean, the point you made there about maybe not everybody in the building trusts him completely yet, there's a reason why the Saints were in on Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'd say it all the time. You know, there's a narrative going around. We see it all the time. Oh, you know, Sean Payton was holding Jameis Winston back, which I think is hilarious. If Sean Payton has doubts about somebody, there's a reason. You know what I mean? He didn't go into this and say, I'm just going to have doubts. He's seeing something. He's seeing something in practice. He's seeing something in the classroom.
Yeah.
He's not getting confidence from something. And that's causing him to not have confidence, not just willy-nilly. I think I'm going to try and hold this guy back for no reason. So we'll find out. We're going to find out this year maybe if Winston's able to let it loose, how that plays out.
I mean, touch wood for me. For me, he can. I've only really got one more question, if that's okay, Jeff. And that is, did you go to the rookie camp? Did you go at all to the rookie camp at the weekend?
No. We had a conflict. I had to go to Sean Payton's commencement speech. That was the exact time as the rookie minicamp. Of course, I've read everything and watched all the videos and got up to snuff on it. But what's the question? I can maybe.
So the question was: is there anybody there that perhaps we haven't heard of, or that you think might make? Because you know the Saints have got a really good record of UDFAs making the roster. Is there anyone under the radar really that people think might have a chance to crack the 53?
Well, just off the top of my head, the guy that I'm most excited to see is the running back Abram Smith. My colleague Amy just wrote about him. He was a draftable prospect. He was a guy that I thought they might draft in the fifth round out of Baylor. Very interesting backstory. I mean, he was a linebacker. You know, you see that a lot at the college level. The running backs, also linebacker prospects, sometimes they go one or two ways. Leonard Fournette, a lot of teams recruited him as a linebacker. Miles Jack also played linebacker at UCLA and running back. It's pretty common. Shaq Thompson did that. And this guy was a linebacker at Baylor, and then they switched him back to running back. He'd started his career at running back, went to linebacker, and put him back at running back, and he ran for 1,600 yards and led the Big 12 conference in rushing one season. So to me, that guy could be an untapped talent, and he supposedly has a great attitude. Amy raved about him when she interviewed him, said he was very mature and smart. He fits exactly what the Saints look for in a player. I put him under my column always do. Pre-draft Saints kind of guys. He's a Saints kind of guy. And they gave him, I think, a guaranteed contract. They went all out to get him in undrafted free agency. I think he's got like $200,000+ guaranteed. So that tells you something. They see something in him and they're interested in him. So when we talked earlier, Ben, about, you know, running back, that in the back of my mind, I almost brought that up because they obviously like this kid, at least want to give him a shot and see what he's like in camp, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, Jeff, Oscar, thank you so much for taking your time out of your day to come and talk to us. And hopefully October we'll be able to do this in person and sit down with beer all together around the table and talk a little bit more about the fantastic start of the season. And then, and hopefully you'll be able to make the trip over and we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah, maybe when training camp starts, let's do another podcast once I have a couple of weeks. Couple weeks under me, and I've had a chance to look at the team.
Yeah,
I've been sweating every day profusely in the 100-degree heat index, and we'll come back and do another one. I can kind of give you an update then.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I look forward to it.
Cheers, all right, Jeff. Guys, thanks for having me on, and hopefully I'll see you over there in October.
Cheers, Jeff.
Yeah. So that was Jeff Duncan from the Times-Picayune/Nona.com. Fantastic friend of the podcast, great guy.
And yeah, great show, James. Thank you for joining me tonight for that.
No, that's all right, mate. It was very, very interesting hearing the how the Sean Payton retirement story that Jeff gets grief for to this day, and how that came about, and the fact that he had to throw the article in to his editor 2 days before the announcement, and he found out after he'd put the article in that Sean Payton was retiring. But you know, it's I suppose that's one of the pitfalls of journalism, isn't it? But no, always good to talk to Jeff. It's always good value for information, and it was a really good chat.
Yeah, so I said, you can find stuff on Times Picking You and NOLA.com. He also wrote the book Payton and Breeze, the greatest offense the NFL's ever seen. I'd highly recommend reading that. It's a fantastic read.
Yes,
I binged it all after Peyton's announcement, and it just got me so nostalgic and looking back at the times, and yeah, it was just fantastic. And James, well, good to talk to you. I don't know when we're next going to do a show. Obviously it's the quiet season now, but I'm sure we'll get together soon. But have a fantastic Jubilee weekend.
Yeah, cool. I think me, you and Jason need to do a season wrap of the Pelicans Plunge, because we kind of got all excited and did a load of podcasts, and then they lost, and we've not done one since.
Yeah, we'll get back on that one soon. And also
we will. Now the draft's been unsorted, I'm sure we'll get back to Jason on that one.
We'll also be doing a World Cup podcast, like the Euros one that we did. We will be returning back to the podcast,
especially on November the 21st.
Especially, you might even get some of the original Dome Patrol members on for that. So that'd be quite good fun. But no, once again, thanks for listening. You can find our podcasts on all the places that you listen to podcasts to. You can follow us on Twitter at Dome Patrol Dome Patrol Podcast and Dome Patrol UK.
It is Dome Patrol PCast, by the way.
It is Dome Patrol PCast. There you go.
It is, yeah.
I should know that by now. But no, if you haven't booked your tickets for London yet or your hotel, get on it. Get over here. It's going to be one heck of a party. We're getting stuff organized. It's just going to be a fantastic, fantastic occasion. So get over here, enjoy it, and we will look after you. We promise.
We will. Good night, everyone.
So, good night.